Okay, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. This is the 24th and last of the Shiurim on the Asura Kolim of the Gula. And as I told you last time, whatever last time is, given the fact that these things are being taped and they're not live, the last time is relative to every person who's listening, that I would actually devote the last class to answering your questions. I know this does not make up for the fact that the shiur was really supposed to have been live, but better a little bit than nothing. Okay, in any case, we'll try to do as much as possible, right, for the time that's afforded. First of all, I want to thank those people who have sent in questions. It's very, you know, it makes me feel good at least that someone's listening and someone is, you know, concerned about the material. And I hope, Amir Tashem, that we will have the opportunity to, you know, continue to relate to each other in an intellectual, commensurable Torah fashion. Now, Adam Khan has several questions which he sent him. He actually sent these questions a long time ago. He was the first to send them in, so because of that, we will begin with Adam Khan. Adam Khan has the following question. Please explain the concept of Shechina non-imminently. Well, you're asking a very good question. What does Shechina mean non-imminently? There's two answers. I can either understand that Shechina is a designation for the sphere of Malchus. So therefore, when I speak about Shechina in a Kabbalistic sense, I'm just speaking about the last sphere in Atzilus. Or Shechina can be a concept, a halacha concept. In other words, your question should have been much more basic. How do I say it? What I mean is for Torah is Kedusha. If you're the Balatanya, you know, there's real Kedusha in the Sefer Torah. But if you're a Chaim Volozhiner, or certainly if you're the guy, what's the Kedusha of the Sefer Torah? The answer is that Kedusha is a halacha concept with which man relates to the world. I've construed a halachic pre-creation notion of Kedusha, which is a consequence of halacha criteria. And therefore, when I look at the Sefer Torah, which is nothing in the physical world but parchment and ink on parchment, then I, in fact, actually view it as having Kedusha. So the answer to your question is that Kedusha is not necessarily an imminent concept, but it's a halachic concept, which is ontologically prior to the world, and it's merely the lens, the halachic lens, by which I view objects which have Kedusha in the world, like Sefer Torah and Tefillin. Okay? That will be the answer to the first question.
And if it's Malchus in Atzilus?
So, Malchus is a region in Atzilus, but it's not in the physical world. Malchus is a region. In other words, imminence means imminence largely in the physical world, in the spiritual world, right? So therefore, whatever spirituality you ascribe to the spiritual world, this will have the sphere of Malchus. I think really the fear of imminence is really speaking about the physical world as we know it. Atzilus is not physical. So in other words, whatever is meant by Malchus, the sphere of Malchus and Atzilus, and that's fine too. We're worried about Atzilus protruding into the physical world. That's what we're learning. But if all the worlds stay the way they are, then that's fine. Okay. Second question. Considering Reb Tzolle's klal of that ideas of Talmid Chachamim becomes expressed in the wider world, what were the Jewish ideas which preceded 20th century existentialism, denial of Hashem, and uniqueness of man, and Einsteinian relativity and quantum mechanics, right, etc., etc.? Okay, obviously, 20th century existentialism, denial of Hashem, and uniqueness of man is not a Jewish concept, it's not a Frum concept, so it might have preceded it. Maybe the Epicureans seem to have denied Hashem. The Rambam in Chelek Gimel Perek Yud Zayin indicates that the Epicureans didn't believe in God. They believed that man, that religion was just coming to scare man, but really, in fact, man should devote himself towards living in the world. And the uniqueness of man, I'm not sure really if the words. I mean, there are aspects of Aristotle which independent man is really not as unique as we understand man as unique. But insofar as I'm not, in other words, certainly the Epicureans In other words, in other words, 26 drugs essentialism and Yukta Tamela too, they're not the same. In fact, they're totally different. 20th century existentialism does believe in that man is unique. I mean, if you read Heidegger, design is that being which thinks of being. But Heidegger denies God, and he's going to be a 20th century existentialist. So I'm not exactly sure what your question is, but if you're speaking about denial of Hashem, that is certainly the Epicureans, as the Rambam relates us in the Ma'ariv of Hukhem. Epicurean philosophy is a type of philosophy which emphasizes man's existence in the world and precluding God's connection with man. So that could be what one would say is existentialism. And I don't know if the Epicureans understood man to be unique. I mean, since there's not God, and man is related to God, so I don't know if Epicureans would understand that, you know, anything that's unique to man is not unique to the animals. That's what I would answer to you. Regarding Einsteinian relativity and quantum mechanics, I mean, I can't go into the detail, but it's very interesting enough that if you look cosmologically, Aristotle's theory of the, in terms of general relativity, Aristotle's theory of the world is, in a certain sense, in terms of space and time, is much closer to general relativity than is Newton. Newton posits that time and space are actually categories which are not physically imminent to the world, but they're mathematical constructs by which man measures things in the world. Aristotle, on the other hand, understood that time is part of motion, and that actually the world is filled up. There's no empty space. So, in a certain sense, Aristotle's notion of time and space is much closer to general relativity, which also understands time to be an imminent object of the world, just as space is. So, I'm not sure. I mean, the fact that the Rambam, Maimonides, adopted Aristotelian science is, in a certain sense, a precursor to general relativity. Regarding quantum mechanics, it's an interesting thing, but if you look at the Rambam in the section, the second section of the Ma'ariv Nebuchadnezzar, there, in several chapters, I think between chapter 20 and 23, 24, the Rambam actually posits a very interesting theory of uncertainty that Kadosh Baruch Hu creates, but there's an uncertainty remains what will be the details of that creation. The Rambam actually expresses this in several parts of the Ma'ariv Hukhem. He expresses this in the second chelek, and he expresses this actually in the third chelek regarding the commandments of the mitzvahs, the details of the mitzvahs. For more on this and its repercussions in Maimonidean theory, I refer to you to our first journal of Rishimu. And there I have an article on the Shorash Sheni of the Rambam. And I use the Shorash Sheni of the Rambam as a example where the Rambam posited that God can create something, but vis-a-vis man, there's a certain uncertainty principle. You should look there and enjoy. Anyway.
Available as a free download.
It's available, Rabbi Sedley says, it's available as a free download from the Hashgafa Circle. It's
hashgafacircle.com.
And I urge all of you to look. There are a number of articles there. The two articles, I have one article on the Shorash Sheni and the second article on negative theology. We will find both of those articles extremely interesting. Okay, now, the third question of Adam Kahn regards the lesson on Atik Yomin Sheshish Mei Bereishis. Explain this in greater depth and how spiritual physical existence made a transition from Bria to Asiyah and the concept of the 6 days and the Chet on the Marishan. Before the Chet was in a physical world of space and time. How are the laws of physics and time different? We spoke about this. I actually brought the Leshem, and I think the Sefer Hadeya. Leshem is only several columns, which for the Leshem is very, very short. For most people, it's two lines. Leshem runs in several columns. Leshem basically says that during the 6 days of creation, creation somehow began in Atzilus. He actually uses the Leshem Atzilus acting on Bria. I'm not really sure what that refers to. But creation began in Atzilus, and as the 6 days of creation unfolded, then the world became more and more physical. So, for example, the very, very beginning of the first of the Sheshmei Bereishis began with Atik, And then after that, so in other words, what happened was that since, so basically the world was much more spiritual in the big onset of creation and became increasingly more physical as creation evolved to the sixth day. So according to the Lashon, right, he doesn't go into detail, but the Lashon does say that there is a process that goes from Atzilus to Bria to Yetzira and Asiya. Finally, by the last day or two, then the world had come up to Asiya. The consequence of this is basically that in the first few days, certainly when the world is in Atzilus, and even in Bria and Yetzira too, that time does not correspond to the physical time that we know this, which means Lashem understands that the world is physical, but if I would measure the world, I would come up with different physical measurements because the Atzilus, in a certain sense, has penetrated the physical world. And this is true during Sheshem Mebreshah. So the penetration of Atzilus into Bria makes fundamental changes in the measurement of the speed of light and of days, etc., etc. Regarding Chet of Adar Rishon, the Leshem, in fact, actually goes in detail about that, but Adar Rishon somehow affected the hierarchy of spiritual world. They came, they moved down to a certain extent. This is a very, very large subject matter in the Leshem. I can't go into the detail, but the Nafka Mina, the consequence of this is that, according to the Leshem, there's no question about it, that that when we read Bereishis, the first chapter, the first book in Bereishis, it's clear that we're not speaking about 24-hour days, certainly in the initial days of creation. And that's the important thing. So we see that the Leshem, who is the most important Mekubal in the tradition of the Goyim, is in fact claiming that because of changes in which come as a natural consequence of the increasing physicalization of the world, that in fact what is indicated in the Chumash does not necessarily correspond to what we would scientifically measure. Okay? Fine. Now, you go on to speak about Earth and geology, right? The Seri Leshem, you see, how do you explain what appears to be processes that have taken so long? Okay, once again, the Leshem doesn't go into detail in this. He gives the basic idea. Regarding Chet of Adam HaRishon, Chet of Adam HaRishon took place a little bit later in creation. The Leshem is speaking about the days before Chet of Adam HaRishon. So, it's not clear to me exactly where to put Chet of Adam HaRishon. Like I said before, the Leshem is only two columns, and because his derech, his way of writing, is to be marich, to expand a lot, he doesn't go into very, very detail. But nonetheless, the Leshem does say that, in fact, if, in fact, time was different in the beginning of creation, then we expect our measurements to indicate a history of the world which is longer than the psukim in Bereishis tell us. Okay, you have a fourth question. Explain Nisim and Tzadik Gozer, Hashem Mekayim, Al Pi Agra. For example, Rav Chinuchas Ben Yonah stopping the river. No, Kodesh Baruch Hu, certainly. I mean, the Goyim understands that Kodesh Baruch Hu can certainly punish and reward. In fact, according to the Goyim, that's the purpose of the world. The fact is that we can't go along and somehow make a connecting line between God and his natural acts. We accept the fact that Kodesh Baruch Hu punishes and that he rewards, but exactly how we make a continuum describe this process in a continuum, that's something which we can't really, it's beyond the conceptual framework of man. But according to the Goyim, for sure, Kodesh Baruch Hu is punishes, rewards, and that's the purpose of the world, is Kavod Baruch Hu. But certainly, Kodesh Baruch Hu can make miracles. I mean, everybody agrees Kodesh Baruch Hu can make miracles. And the question is, how he makes miracles is, you know, a miracle is, first of all, a miracle is an exception. It's not a rule. That's number one. And number two, but how he makes miracles is not something that we can understand as to be any underlying, nature of the world that people can explore. I mean, like every one of Kodesh Baruch Hu's ma'asim, man witnesses them, doesn't mean that man is privy to understanding them. The only thing man is privy to understanding is the physical world, which operates according to natural law most of the time. Okay, question number five. Question of Rama Mar Nevuchim. How incorporeal connect to corporeal world? Answer, through Hashem's overflow of thoughts. How does this answer solve it? How do his thoughts transfer him to our world? Okay, we have to say the following thing. In terms of creation, God is completely incorporeal. I mean, the Rambam proves that there has to be a first mover. But the first mover, by definition, is incorporeal. This is the Rambam proves in Mor Nevuchim in the first chapter of the second volume. However, in Kodesh Baruch Hu, things are thought. Now, once again, thoughts for the Rambam are not physical. So Kodesh Baruch Hu thinks a thought, which itself produces a thought, because the thought can think of itself, and it, that also in turn produces a thought. And then this series of thoughts, basically, according to the Rambam, are like a spring, or like radio waves, and Nevi'im picked them up. So basically we have two lanes. We have physical creation, and we have what's called intellectual creation. Physical creation, God is incorporeal. There is no detail as how God creates the physical world. We only know that God is the first mover, and God is incorporeal and totally separate from the world. But then there's what's called the creation of God's ideas. And there the Rambam says God thinks thought, which in turn produces a overflow of thoughts, of God's thoughts. They end up in the act of intellect, and man as a prophet picks up these thoughts, these intellects, and because of that, he's able to express prophecy. These are like two dimensions. There's two worlds. There's the world, the physical world, and the world of thoughts. And this, in fact, actually is how man is informed of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Rotzein, of his desire, of his commandments, and those obligations of man. Okay, now. Six, explain further Leshem on No Yeridus HaDeiras HaTeres Nista Only Nigla. Well, the Leshem says the following thing. The Leshem says, we see that there are greater Giluyim, greater revelations, right, with history. For example, I mean, in Nigla, we have the Chumash, we have the Tamamayim, and everybody accepts the fact that that the early generations have greater proximity and are closer to God than the later generations. Later generations, we see less chidushim, less novela. There's a lesson with Kabbalah, on the contrary. The greatest Kabbalah chidushim we see really begin in the 16th century with the Ari. The Gilya Zoya is only first in the 12th century. So what the Leshem is saying is that we see that while the halachic part of Judaism commands less authority with the ongoing generations, the Chelek HaNista, the revelations of the Nista, the hidden part of the Torah, reveal more as the generations continue. This is Leshem's Shita, in the Chidushim Ubi Urim, and in other places too. Okay, question number seven of Adam Khan. If no sparks of holiness in the physical world, where does the physical world get its kiyum from? I mean, the kiyum is from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's just that we can't close our eyes and see a Kodesh Baruch Hu holding up the world. At least, if you're a Lithuanian. Creation is something which we don't understand. Once again, this question, Adam, is popping up time and time again, right? There's no old man with a white beard who's taking mud and creating a world. We don't begin with creation. We witness creation. We witness a world, and we study that world. We accept the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, but creation is not a physical event. It's only man's relationship to the world which he apprehends. You're trying to be very kinematic in your understanding of the universe. That's not the way things go. We're operating backwards. Man apprehends the world. Man has a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Man, by studying the world scientifically, can seek to understand what were the physical processes which gave rise to the world which we, which is revealed to us, right, through our senses. The event of creation is something which we can't understand because there's a irreducible dichotomy between God's incorporeality and the physical world which we understand. It's not important. We believe somehow, we believe that God created the world. God is the source of all of existence. But taking that and creating a kinematic process which describes it in time is something which is beyond the conceptual horizons of man, unless man decides that he's going to become, take on a more Hasidic, i.e. paganistic point of view. Now, your eighth question is request for Fritzishu Urim, learn Shah Ulashem. Adam Khan, I'm very proud of you. I see that you become a real Litvak. There's no question about it that the Lashem is the natural Liman after the Goyin. But Mitzvah, we will speak about that and I hope we'll come to some type of a satisfactory agreement. In any case, I want you to know that I am currently giving Shi'ulim on the Meir Nevuchim on the HashkafaCircle.com.
/ Rambam.
The HashkafaCircle.com / Rambam. A lot of the issues, not all the issues, but some of the issues we've been speaking about actually come up with the Shi'urim. The Shi'urim are actually focusing on the Rambam's theory of creation, which actually begins in section 2, let's call it chapter 13, perhaps chapter 12, and ends with chapter 30. We are going in very, very much detail into the Rambam's development of his arguments against the Aristotelian eternity of the world. We are comparing the Rambam with Greek sources. We're also bringing in modern philosophy. If you enjoyed the Goyin Shi'urim, I'm sure that you will enjoy the Shiur of the Meir Nevuchim. You should turn to it. I really appreciate some of your comments, as your comments are very, very much to the point. Okay, thank you, Adam. We'll be in touch with you so soon. Okay, now, Benjamin Milch. How are you doing, Benjamin? In the very beginning, you were one of the active participators. I haven't heard from you in a while. But I want to thank you very, very much for the coffee that you brought me when you came down to Israel. Now, Benjamin Milch has the following question. He says, the Baal HaTanya excused the Groh of not believing in the obligation to follow the Ari. Rav Chaim's answer was that the Groh has respect for the Ari and looked up sources for the words of the Ari. However, the Baal HaTanya's concussion is still running the money. Am I incorrect? No, you are correct. Rav Chaim Velashana did not really deny what the Baal HaTanya said, that even though the Goyin had tremendous respect for the Ari, and the Rav Chaim Velashana is very, very explicit that when he would even mention the name of the Ari, he would tremble, his whole body would tremble. Nonetheless, like anything else, even though he regarded the Ari as being a tremendous person, nonetheless, there are places where the Goa took the liberty of arguing with the Ari, and it might be because of the Baal HaTanya says that since Kabbalah is also Teira should be Alpeh, then Lo Bashamayim, maybe there are one or two things of the Ari that are Midah Shamayim, but nonetheless, since the Kabbalah is rooted in the texts of the Zoya, the Idra, Idrabe, Idrazuta, Safdin Steyasa. For this reason, any person can come along and argue, because everything that Ari says is beholden to the fundamental text. In other words, the Ari cannot come in Mechadish Kabbalah Yesh Miayin, given the fact that the Kabbalah is ultimately derived from those pertinent parts of the Zoya of Hashem Be'yochai. So, right, in economy, I think Reb Chaim just wanted to say that you shouldn't interpret the Baal HaTanya statements that the Ari had some type, that the Goyin had, it was mezalzel, abused the Ari, had, didn't treat him properly. It's not true. He respected him, but like in Torah, like in Nicholas, so in Nister, these things have to be argued upon. And the Goyin certainly felt that he was a Baal Pelukter on the Ari, just like he felt he was a Baal Pelukter on all the Rishonim. Okay, fine. How's the concept of Rosh Hashem Shtim with the Gemara, the second paragraph of with Shimon HaPakur? I'm not really sure what your question is. Maybe we'll go to another time. Chaim Veloy says, a person can misakin his chatois by learning Torah. Chaim mentions doing a maisa. What about a chait that is not a maisa? That's a good question. I don't really have an answer for you. Maybe a person should, maybe learn Torah, but a person learns Torah, he begins to think good thoughts. But I don't really have an answer. I don't know what Chaim Veloy would say. Your next question is, knowing that the Baal HaTanya using the same mashal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathing into the lungs of a person at the beginning of the second part of the Tanya, explain the Ruach HaLokim, why would Rav Chaim use the same analogy and only switch the location of the Shema from within the person to the lungs? Well, that's very poshut, Ben. I mean, Rav Chaim Volozhiner wants the Ruchnius to be outside of the world. So man's neshama is inside of God. Balatanya wants the Ruchnius to be inside the world. So man's neshama is inside of man. It's a question of immanence versus transcendence. If I want, especially if I want man to have the Tzelem Elokim, which means it is able to move the entire universe because man's Sheirish is even before the creation of the world. Right? Kuchabricha Yisrova Reisa Chadu. So man's neshama has to be located pre-creation. Therefore, it's in the lungs of God. But according to Balatanya, the man's avoid is imminent. So therefore, man's neshama can be located within man. I think that's a pretty clear answer. Then there's a takeaway question. In 2006 in Sfas, Rav Langer of Tzadik with us. During those shiurim, the Rav said that the four creation of a person should contemplate the union of Kodesh Baruch Hu, or everything is made up of stuff of Kodesh Baruch Hu. This does not at all seem to be like the Gra. Ben, you're absolutely right. This is connected to the Gra. How are we supposed to think, act, approach life in Avodas Hashem? Ben, I cannot give you an answer what to do. This is your cheshbon, but Kodesh Baruch Hu has given you two drachim. There's a derech of the tzaddik, of the chassid, the derech of the goy. Every person has to take that derech which he feels is either correct or he feels is closest to what he innately senses spiritually. So it is true that I taught the tzaddik in Shfas, being the fact that most people in the world, especially the boys in Machon Shlomo, can much better relate to a chassidish hashkafa in the world. So because of that, I taught the tzaddik, but in a chanami, now that you've left Machon Shlomo and you're more tempered intellectually, you can begin to swallow the more difficult and esoteric understandings of the Vilna Goy.
Okay?
Are both paths valid? Yeah, both paths are valid. No question about it.
So a person should just pick what feels right.
Right, right. In fact, even the Shlomo says that the notion of the Chazal, Eil ve'eil divrekim chayim, is going really on a garata. In a certain sense, more than even halacha. In halacha, there's a hachra. In a garata, there's no hachra. Some people think there is, but I say there isn't. Okay? So, Ben, like I said before, you can be Hasidish, you can be Litvish, you can be like a Psadik, like the Balatanya, like the Goyim, like the Leshem. Right? The Iker is mitzvahs. Halacha. Okay, now, Ben Manowitz, Shalom Aleichem Ben Manowitz, how you doing? I have to get to you, I understand I have an important question to ask you. I'm sorry I haven't gotten to you yet, but we're getting there, Mitzvah Shem. Now, Ben Manowitz, I think you're first interested in this concept, this dichotomy between ontology and ethics. Your question number one is, after a introduction, how does that comport with Avraham Avinu's having kept all the mitzvahs? So you understand that Avraham Avinu's endeavor was, at least at first, an ontological investigation leading according to the Anochi Hashem and Lo Yeh relations. Okay? A possible answer is that once Avraham Avinu made the ontological discovery of the existence and similarity of Hashem, Hashem then revealed them to Avraham in a manner that included the Dibur mitzvahs aspect. You suggest a theory. Let me tell you like this. First of all, the Gemara does say in Yuma that the others kept the mitzvahs by Avraham Avinu, even Erev Chatzeres, Erev Techuvim, there's two Gesois. However, in the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah basically said that Avraham Avinu kept the discovered HaKadosh Baruch Hu and kept the Kavat Tzedek. In the soon-to-be-published lectures of Rabbi Yosheva Soloveitchik, which yours truly is editing, Rabbi Soloveitchik says the following thing. He says that it is true that Avraham Avinu, having discovered that God created the world, came to the conclusion that since man shares in the vast powers, almost divine powers of hegemony in the physical world, then man has to understand that sharing in God's powers comes with a certain amount of responsibility. Just like if you let me live in your house, then I have to have responsibility of doing your will, because whenever you let a person share in someone else's property, this comes with a certain amount of responsibility. So, but in Yeshua Soloveitchik, it seems that the little concept, a general concept, in other words, Avraham Avinu didn't discover all the details of the mitzvahs. Avraham Avinu just discovered a general ethical concept that given the fact that God is the creator and thereby owner of the world, he says in a halachic sense, then man therefore ipso facto becomes obligated in the what you would call the terms of the tenancy. And that's how Rabbi Soloveitchik explains this. The concept that Rabbi kept all the mitzvot of the Torah, even though it's mentioned in Chazal, doesn't appear in the Rambam. The Rambam's mashmi kept the kavod tzedek, meaning that general ethical principles. If you want to say that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah, there are shitas, like, literally, of course, it's a chazal like that, the Nefesh Chaim speaks about that too, but there we understand that Avraham Avinu kept the mitzvot because he learned about them Kabbalistically. So, in other words, the distinction of ontology and ethics, at least from the Rambam, right, would entail that Avraham Avinu, at least from the Rambam and from every sort of basic explanation, which is based upon the Rambam, is that Avraham Avinu did not know all the details of the mitzvahs, but rather, in fact, he came to understand that there are broad ethical obligations, right, insofar as man is apportioned the powers of God, and that's the most you can say about Avraham Avinu. However, when the Jews got the Torah, how say that? That was different. Then all the details of the mitzvahs ensue. And as a result of that, then certainly a person cannot possibly in any way recover the details of the mitzvahs from the ontology of the world. That's Rabbi Soloveitchik's understanding of the Shitas HaRambam. And that's what I would say would be the case according to the Goyim too. Even though the Goyim does have the Gilsa Filo Eof Techumen, he wasn't necessarily the Raisa. I don't really know what the Goyim means by this. It could possibly be that the Goyim is student of Avinu has some deep metaphysical knowledge of the world, but in that case, certainly after Matan Torah, it's clear that details can only be known through revelation. The Goyim does not in any way ascribe to the Shitas of people like Avsatcha Goyim of High Goyim, who believe that in potential, man can intellectually come to recover the entire halach and all of its details if you give him enough time. Anyway, that's what I would say. That basically, the Avraham Avinu, like Rabbi Yishai ben Soloveitchik says, like the Rambam indicates in the Yad HaChazaka, in the Chazaka of Zohar, came to a general concept of ethics and not the details of mitzvahs. Related to that question is question number two. How much more time do we have? What? Okay. To the extent that the world is irreducible, does that imply that a sufficiently deep understanding will allow at least a shadow of the saying of Hashem? If not, as at least in his Ratzoy? That's to say, if Hashem couldn't have created the world in any other way, then doesn't the shape of the world reflect the shape of the symptoms since the one will be able to teach about the other? Well, like this. The Rambam does say, and, you know, the knowledge of God, a person can arrive at philosophically. So in other words, no question about it, the symptom of the Ri was a... It was a shita of his. It was a philosophy. You know, there's nothing chazal as a simsum. So, a person can look at the world and recognize it as a creative God. But the details of the mitzvahs cannot come from any type of ontological observation. That's what we're speaking about. Everybody agrees that the Rambam says in Mayna Vulchem that a neuchi liyelecha can be understood philosophically. Man can understand that God created the world, that God exists, and the prohibition of paganism, a virtual fact that God is incorporeal. That's why, that the Rambam, by the way, Toch Agav understands, that's the meaning that the two first commandments, Klai Yisrael Har, Rupiak Vula, because they can be intellectually ascertained. The Rambam goes to Shitasai that most people, since they have not reached a level of Chachma, are incapable of Nevua, even if it comes as a result of the divine enactment. So, in other words, your answer is correct. But past this basic understanding of God's creation of the world, and the prohibition of paganism, that's the furthest a person can get as to intellectually extracting ethics for the world. Okay, now. I think here your question goes on a little further. You see, I use the word shadow above intentionally because in a way I'm asking a variation of Plato's cave question. There are many different three-dimensional shapes that can cast a two-dimensional shadow, such that if I see a shadow, I can't especially... Right. In other words, you're speaking about the tzimtzum. I agree with you, Ben, that concepts of the tzimtzum could be understood ontologically. When we're speaking about the shrinking ontology and ethics, we're not speaking about general ethical considerations of the existence of God in relation to the universe. That, for sure, could possibly be gained by our understanding of the world, or at least understanding what's not in the world. What we're speaking about are the details of the ethics, the details of the halacha. That's something that can only be known through revelation. Question number three. You mentioned multiple stimulus in passing, but don't address, at least, not Shem through six. Gideon is saying that even the world before the kind of event in the village of Hashkacha, which I read to include a kind of imminence, then without a further symptom, and taking this given an immutability question, how can there be not be a remaining imminence of the world as it is now? That's not true. The Gaon explains like this. The Gaon explains that what happens is, if you look in the Safdet Sneosa, in Daf, I think, Chavav, I'm sure I mentioned this in one of the Shiurim, that basically the process of Tzimtzum says that going into the lower worlds, what happens is the spiritual, in other words, what you have is in every world, you have three parts of a world, right? You have the upper part, then you have the middle part, the lower part. And that's what's called usually Chokh Bina Vadas, and there's Chesek Vod Fez, and there's called Yesod. The Goyen says that what happens in creation, the Goyen says in Yikavu HaMayim, in Mokom Echad, what happens is that, for example, you have the physical world, and what happens is there's a spiritual world, I guess that's enrobed by the physical world, or maybe it's within the physical world. I don't want to go into the details, but somehow the spiritual world, which is the next spiritual world above our physical world, lifts up its lower part. It's one-third Teferes Netzachot in your side. It lifts it up, and therefore you're left in the physical world. And what happens is this flapping actually continues ad infinitum. So, for example, let's see, if we have Atzilus Bri Yetzia Nasiya. So, basically, Yetzira lifts up its lower third. You're left with pure Asiya. And then, I guess, Bria lifts up its pure third. And you're left with pure Yetzira. And then after that, I guess Atzilus lifts up its third, you're left with pure Bria. So what happens is now the Goyen says, if you take this process, and definitely that's the Tzoy that seems so. So basically what's happening is you have this lifting up. I guess in Bereishis, right, maybe this is what happened too in Bereishis, that basically Atzilus left itself up after the first few days, and then Bria lifted itself up, and then Yetzira lifted itself up. And then afterwards, you're left with Asiya the last few days of Bereishis. So you have this, in other words, like this lifting up process, right? And this constitutes the creation. It says the Goyen, it's the Tzimtzum. What characterizes this process, that every stage, spirituality is moving up. What you're left is the physical world, or the more physical world, right, is left behind. Okay. Question number four. When the Vilna Gaon posits a Tzimtzum Bamish in the Rotzon of Hashem, isn't he left then with the same Kreshek's legal problem that the whole kind of Tzimtzum came to address in the first place? That's to say, when I bring up Tzimtzum, was the stuff of creation actually made of? Hashem certainly didn't create something outside of himself, but the Tzimtzum is positive, requires that whatever the stuff is free of his Rotzon. But the Tzimtzum isn't the unknown essence of Hashem, so perhaps what's that stuff of creation made of? Okay. This is a question, let me rephrase your question. This is a question that bothers a lot of people. How could there possibly be Tzimtzum Kipshuta? If that's true, there's something that's not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right? What led me to Tzimtzum is how can there be a world other than a Kodesh Baruch Hu? In other words, how do we have something other than a Kodesh Baruch Hu? That's what you're asking. Ben, you should know, first of all, you're asking a very good question. There's a very bright person who actually was came to the yeshiva a few weeks ago and asked me the same question. And he says, because of that, he can't believe that the Gaon really believed in Tzimtzum Kipshutai. And he quoted to me some famous darshan bizman hazeh. Well, I guess their whole object in life is basically to distort and distort words in the beforeship. First of all, to answer this question, you can answer it one of two ways. The basic answer is that The whole process is mitzidenu. In other words, the tzimtzum creates, of course, this dichotomy between the Kodesh Baruch Hu and the Kodesh Baruch Hu as we view it. The fact that the Kodesh Baruch Hu leaves the physical world should have concerned us that where the physical world come from, because this is all mitzidenu from our point of view. In other words, I don't have to draw a line between before the tzimtzum and after the tzimtzum. In other words, before the tzimtzum, I accept as a concept there's nothing but God. After the tzimtzum, which is also from my point of view, is a place devoid of God. But that doesn't mean that God can create something other than himself. It just means that the way I perceive the world, there's something which is devoid of what you would call God's spirituality. It's physical in the way I intuitively understand something which is physical. In other words, given the fact that everything is relevant from my point of view, so there's no reason to assume that secretly the physical world has to be sort of like an illusion for a God which underneath everything encompasses all reality. You have to sort of like think about that concept. The fact is that if you go on later in the lectures, because you said you're only up to lecture 8, you will see that actually I devised what's called a Moebius strict theory of creation, where in fact physicality actually leads to a greater spirituality. Actually, reality is actually the surface of a sphere, and it twists to produce a different orientation, which allows man input in man's interpretation of the Torah, therefore influencing reality itself. So actually, that explanation will actually perhaps might sit a little bit better with you. I suggest that you finish the shiurim, and if you're still troubled by this. But I think if you really think about it, the point is, given the tzimtzum is not this continual process which we can mark at every point of time. Tzimtzum basically means that there's a before and after, and there's no connection between the before and after. That's the irreducible ontological dichotomy which we associate with God. Since we're speaking about my concept of the world and my concept of God as it relates to the world, and not God of himself, there's no problem with saying that part of the world is physical, is devoid of God. Because after all, it's all from my point of view. If this is an epistemological idealism, let it be as such. In any case, that would be my answer to you. Question five. By the way, Ben, your questions are excellent questions. I would actually go through word by word, but that would we'd have to make a whole shiur for that. Maybe another time, it's a sham. What is the difference between mice and dibor? That's question five. That is, what defines one as ontological and one as ethical? Because while we're dealing with Hashem, for whom there isn't really a distinction between conceptualization and expression between speech and action. The mice and dibor are basically halachic. In other words, there are halachas regarding mice, there are halachas regarding dibor. In other words, we can't look at mice and dibor from an ontological point of view and on the basis of that draw ethical consequences. The halor, which is revealed to us, reveals to us laws of Maisa, laws of Dibor. There are certain halachas which halachas in Maisa, certain halachas in Dibor. In other words, once we posit the ontological ethical distinction, then basically the distinctions between Maisa and Dibor are not necessarily ontological, but only ethical. Okay. Thanks for the time to read these. Ben, thank you very, very much. I appreciate your very, very to-the-point comments. If I haven't answered them satisfactorily, let me know. I'll probably be actually calling you another day or two with my important question. And I want to thank everybody for having, taken the time to hear these shiurim of the Gaon.
You were going to give a summary of the entire Gaon and how it relates to modern thinking in the world.
Yeah. Do we have that much
15
time?
15 minutes.
Okay.
A very quick summary and a very quick.
A very quick summary. I don't want to go into all the particular issues. It actually has been a while since I've given the shiur. I'm not even sure I remember all the guide, and it got so complicated I couldn't understand it myself for a while. But in any case, what was the purpose of giving the shiur of the guide in the first place? I think I want to go back to that. Right? There is a common misconception. It's a conception misconception in the world that in order for me to believe in science, to believe, look at the world from a rational point of view, I have to basically be a throwback to the pre-Ari medieval period. And since whoever this mysterious we is, right, does not allow for any type of philosophical throwbacks. Or since the Ari has revealed to us the metaphysical truths of the world, right? So therefore, people like Maimonides and others are basically out. They're puzzled. Maybe they're not apikosim when they live, but today they'll certainly be apikosim. There's no back going to the Rishonim, and therefore, it's impossible for a person to believe in the mystical revelations from the Ari and the Zohar, and to maintain a rational view of the world in which science is something real, and that man can intellectually apprehend the world in accordance with his intellectual faculties and according to the conclusions of science. And I say that that is not true, not necessarily true. The purpose of the Shum of the Goyin was to communicate to you, my dear listeners and students, that in fact, the Goyin's understanding of the Kabbalah, or the Kabbalah's Ari, allows for a very perfect and peaceful coexistence between the most modern scientific theories and the Shita of the Zohar and the Shita of the Ari and the Jewish conception of metaphysical reality. The Goyin is basically a Gilgul of the rationalist theory of the Rambam post-Arizal, right? There are obviously adjustments which the Goyin made, but nonetheless, the Goyin allows a person to accept the revelations of the Ari, the revelations of the Zohar, on the other hand, to be able to face and understand the world of science as being a real world where a person is given his intellect by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to explore it and to understand it, and a person doesn't have to feel that he has to shut off his intellectual and rational faculty in order to be a Jew in the post-Ari sense. The Goyin's philosophy is a very, very fundamental example of how a Jewish person can think and live with modern ideas and adhere to the truth of the Kadosh Baruch Hu and his Torah and to the mystical revelations of the Zohar. There is, just like the Goyin understood that there's no contradiction between Nigla and Nista, so too the Goyin understood that there's no contradiction between Nista and the natural world. On the contrary, intellect is the most important aspect of man. Man is commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to use his intellect both in Torah and both in science in order at arriving at a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu where he acts as that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him, B'tzelem Elokim, Yisrael, V'ya'isa, B'kutsha B'richu, the Torah, the Jewish people, and God in one, indicates that through man's intellect, he can discover both the mystical truths of the Torah and the rational truths of the created world. This is really the important message which I think comes across in these 23 Shiurim. The claim that after the Arizal, we have to shut off our intellects, that the world's an illusion, that we shouldn't believe what the scientist says. In my opinion, the Goyin would understand this and fish, but it's actually bizarre. Unfortunately, the last few years have produced a new form of paganism. In every generation, we have to, in the tradition of the Goyin, fight the paganism of that time. And my opinion is, this notion that the physical world is an illusion, that in fact, one has to resort to mysticism to understand what we sense, what we conceptually understand in the natural world, this is a shkafa which some people accept. You know, it's kol hakavod, fine for them. But this is not something which obligates those people who are in the tradition of the Vilna Goyin. And because of this, I think that the bottom line is that as religious Jews, as Jews who accept upon themselves all the details of the Torah and accept upon themselves that man is created by Tzelem Elokim to explore the physical world and, right, do b'gas hayam, that in fact, actually, the shitas, the philosophy, and the Kabbalah of the Goyin provides us with the philosophical framework and machinery that we can achieve this goal. I want to thank everybody who in fact actually worked very, very hard to achieve these lectures, especially Mati Lichtenstein and Dan Schatzman were instrumental in creating the Shiurim, Rabbi David Sedley. Without him, nothing would exist. And I want to thank him very much for doing all the technical work, for keeping me alert, and reminding me when the time is up, which is going to remind me in a few seconds, okay? Until that time, I want to wish everybody Haslacha Kol Tuv, until we meet again. Be well.